Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell. Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
The music world moves fast. Want to stay up to date on the latest albums and get in-depth examinations with the artists? Check out Consequence of Sound, the podcast. Bite-sized album reviews for the music fan on the go who wants to stay in the know, and much more. Subscribe to the series on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, and let the writers of Consequence of Sound steer you right. Check it out at consequenceofsound.net/COS podcast. Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Take a second before we get started to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now, wherever you get your podcasts from, whether that's iTunes and Apple Podcast, Acast, Podchaser, Spotify, or YouTube. You can subscribe anywhere. We put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Consequence of Sound, and we'd love to keep you up to date on all of those. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Steve Mason, who's got a brand new solo record called About the Light. Of course, you remember Steve as a founder of the Beta Band. He has had a fantastic solo career that's lasted long after the Beta Band. And his newest one is no exception. It might be one of my favorite things that he's ever done. We're going to get the backstory on this record, how it was filled with personal loss, but also lots of celebration. He's become a father, he's newly married, and a lot of that's went into what people are calling his most positive record. We'll also talk about its ties with 60s soul and gospel and even early pop radio. Of course, there's usually a political side, too, and that's definitely represented on this record with a song called America Is Your Boyfriend. He's saying some very important things that I so appreciate, and we're going to talk about those as well. And we'll talk a little bit about the Beta Band. They put out some reissues last year, and in fact, the self-titled record will turn 20 later this year, so we'll get into that just a bit. But for the most part, it's all about this new record, About the Light. It's Kyle Meredith with Steve Mason.
How you doing, Kyle?
My congratulations on About the Lights. You know, some people are calling this your masterpiece, and I think I might have to agree on that.
Well, that's high praise indeed. Yeah. I'll take that. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. I know that can sometimes be an odd statement, especially considering that, you know, this album is quite a bit different than some of your back catalog. And I don't, like, usually when an artist does a record, it's like, this is my favorite record I've ever done. And it makes sense because it's you know, the thing that you just spent time working on. Yeah. But I mean, do you see it as in any kind of comparison to the stuff you've done in the past?
I think it's just you know, constantly moving on and constantly kind of creating a different type of energy with every record, hopefully. And what I love about this record, full of positive energy. And it's, you know, in terms of even the slow songs have got an energy about them, which is much more where my head's at the moment. So just great when a record reflects your state of mind. And I guess that's one thing that, you know, people that do what I do are quite lucky that we, you know, we can get all that stuff out of our system and reflect how we're feeling at the moment and kind of almost reinvent yourself with every record, you know. But I absolutely love this album. I'm so proud of it, and it does everything that I wanted it to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, historically, reflecting on something like stability has seemed tricky for artists in the past. I just listened to a George Harrison, the self-titled one from 79 for the first time, and that was his I'm in Love and I'm Good record, and it's to me, it's not a very good record, but you seem to have skirted that whole thing. Like, yeah. There's still an energy to this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I learned a little while ago, actually probably 20 years ago, because I suffered from depression for a long time, and so I decided I was going to hold off going on antidepressants because I was terrified that it would sort of change my songwriting mojo and take away what I wrote about. So I sort of I stayed depressed and sad for way too long because I was terrified of that. But then eventually I thought, yeah, I can't take this anymore. So I went on them. And it doesn't, you know, and I'm no poster boy for antidepressants. I still think, you know, you have to sort yourself out. But what it does do is give you a bit of breathing space. And within that breathing space, you find a certain amount of positivity. And it doesn't take away what you do. You're still an artist. You can still write songs, but it just changes the content of what you're writing about. And that, obviously, it's not a bad thing, you know. So I think, I've been very lucky, you know, that I've gone rubbish, you know. But there's still time, though.
Well, you know, there's plenty of
time.
You know, it does sound like, because some of the backstory is you're talking about this, you know, there is both loss and life, as I've read. You know, you've had a daughter, and congratulations on that, and got married, and at the same time you've lost family members as well. So when you go into a record, I mean, all of that's building up. Does that actually kind of focus the direction that you want to take it in to say, you know, this is going to be a lighter record, and I'll use the word poppier as well.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, I've always had a deep love of pop music, of every kind of pop music, whether it's kind of manufactured, if it's good manufactured, and you know, there's nothing wrong with really, really good manufactured pop music. If it's a great song, you know, I don't mind a bit of that. There's room for that, you know. And then I love, you know, pop music like you know, I mean, I think the Sex Pistols, I mean, those were pop songs, really, a lot. You know, they were pop songs at the end of the day. You know, there's lots of different examples of dark, subversive pop songs and avant-garde pop songs. You know, I've always loved pop music. I love a great chorus and melody and the sort of 3.5 minutes of slice of golden melody. It's an amazing thing. You know, if you can write something that can take people somewhere else for 3.5 minutes, that's a hell of an ability. And so I think strangely, you know, because the Beat Band was pretty avant-garde, and we were certainly not known for our pop songs, you know. So I think the older I've got, the more I've become interested in trying to write really good pop songs. Most people do it the other way around. I mean, you know, the Beatles went from being probably the best pop music writers, certainly of their day, if not of all time, to being more experimental, and that's the way a lot of bands do it. But for some reason, I've gone the other way. I don't know why.
You know, bringing in American soul and gospel into a record like this, you know, as furthering what you're already talking about, where does that part come from you?
Well, I've always had a huge American rhythm and blues and soul and blues, and I think that I knew when I was working on these tracks, that when I was writing them and stuff, that if I didn't add another element, then it was really just going to be a guitar album, and I didn't really want that. You know, I wanted more depth to it than that. You know, and when you put in a brass section, you know, a really great brass section like I was lucky enough to get, and my three backing singers that I use, you know, it really adds a completely different dimension to the whole thing. Especially if you do it subtly and you don't overuse it, because sometimes there's a tendency to kind of, if you've got access to these things, just to push that button all the time, mm-hmm. you know, never take your finger off the button. button. But I think if you use it in a much more subtle way, it comes in when you're not expecting it, and suddenly there's a whole other depth and a whole other level there. And I think also think that I I've pushed myself personally on the vocals as well this time a lot more. I was trying to reach inside myself and find that little slice of soul that is actually in all of us, you know. But I think, it's always good to have a bit of help. And the brass section and my backing singers massively helped me out. Yeah, I think it just adds a depth to the record that it would hugely miss if it wasn't there.
When you take, American soul and gospel and you throw pop in it, it sort of reminds me, of course, of some of those 60s groups like the Ronettes and sort of a lot of that genre and everything. And then you listen to a couple of these songs, like, the first couple of singles, Stars Around My Heart and Walking Away From Love. It seems like it's kind of rooted in that tradition. And I'll bring up especially Stars Around My Heart. There's a little love affair with the radio, which, a lot of those groups always did, that I appreciate coming from where I am.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff, all that kind of early to even to late 60s soul stuff. I loved a good example, the later Marvin Gaye stuff, mm-hmm. when he gets a lot more kind of political and the sugar pop. It was like the talk of revolution and the civil rights movement swept through America towards, later in the 60s. That whole appetite for the kind of pop soul music kind of evaporated a bit, and people wanted much more gritty, real stuff about what was really happening. And I find that that's really exciting. That's really exciting when all that's dropped, and you still have these incredible soul records, but they're much more dangerous and much more alive and much more speaking the truth, and they're not hiding from anything. They're not trying to, you're looking behind the curtain, and that's always a very exciting place to be. James Brown, obviously, but as I was saying, the later Marvin Gaye stuff, when he's producing the records and the stuff, these are incredibly exciting records, and just with so much power, that I'm comparing what I'm doing to him, of course. That would be insane.
There's an easy seg there, of course, with how the record starts out with "America Is Your Boyfriend." I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about, taking these great soul and pop sounds and putting it something that's real. And and of course, that's an interesting song, of course, to be, because here I am in America, and I feel like, we are in a moment where we should be taking a long, hard look in the mirror, but most of the time we're just squabbling, and I don't know how that's going to affect the future, but with a song like this, I always find it really interesting and sometimes even comforting to hear folks from outside of the country being like, folks, come on, get it together.
That's good to hear, because it does make a lot of your fellow countrymen and women very angry when other people have a look. But I think that, the title of that song is perhaps a little misleading, really. I had that title for a long time, America Is Your Boyfriend, because it sounded like something that a kid would say in a playground. If you love America so much, why didn't you marry it? Right. That sort of really childish thing. I think it kind of comes from the sort of rubbish that we're always fed here in the UK about how there's this special relationship between the UK and America. And all that really means is that our government is in bed with your government. And I don't think that that's anything to be proud of.
Right.
America has been marching around the world just like Great Britain marched around the world during our little empire period, these governments, certainly my government here in this country doesn't represent me, and it doesn't represent my friends and the people I, listen to and trust. They don't represent us, and I don't want them to represent us. It's a false image, and I would imagine there's a lot of people that feel similar in America. They're kind of disgusted by the way that your government and your military represent yourselves around the world. And it's difficult. It's very difficult. It's a crazy time here in the UK at the moment with the whole Brexit thing, and everything's completely in turmoil. The right wing in this country is really being pumped up, and there's a huge right wing kind of rhetoric going on in the media, and it's just crazy. I mean, everyone's just so sick of it, and Yeah, I mean, it's very tricky. I mean, I wrote a whole, you know, political concept album called Monkey Minds and the Devil's Time about two albums ago. You know, and I said kind of everything I really wanted to say about all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I suppose I've got to the point where I've stopped looking at the big picture now. You know, I just try and concentrate on my daily interactions with other human beings and try and make those as loving and as compassionate and beautiful as they can be. And so rather than letting the media constantly frighten me about what and telling me what I should be afraid of on a daily basis, so I'm constantly living in fear, I just think, well, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to listen to you. I don't want your propaganda coming into my head. I am going to create my own world and talk to people how I want to talk to people and have relationships in the way that I want to do it and treat people with respect and love and then see what comes back. And that's really important. Local, you know, just try and keep it local, you know, local politics and local relationship and take it from there, you know, and just try and build your own little world, which is free from this fear and paranoia, which is being spread everywhere.
I mean, you've summed up my sentiments exactly, and I'm really happy that you've kind of said it the way you did because you know, a lot of my favorite artists, a lot of my friends and favorite people in the world, you know, aren't from America, but I don't look at them and kind of put their government in their face, you know, or whatever. Just the same as I wouldn't want someone to for the first time meeting me just to associate myself with who's in the White House right now. Like that, I definitely would not want that to happen. Exactly. So I really do appreciate kind of the angle you come at.
Yeah, I just think we're just constantly given these enemies. You know, we're constantly given these enemies all the time. I mean, it's just classic. Whether it's, you know, in the 80s, it was Russia, and Russia was fighting a war and trying to take over Afghanistan. And the British and the Americans were fighting with the Taliban against the Russians. Then the Russians cleared off and the Cold War came down, and then suddenly we're fighting the Taliban, you know, and then now the Russians are back again, you know, so it's back to the 80s again, right. You know, it's just like what on earth is going on? All this. And it's just, you know, and ultimately, everywhere you go, ultimately, it's always us that suffer. It's always us that suffer. We're the ones that go and die in these wars. We're the ones that are having pay cuts. We're the ones signing zero-hour contracts. We're the ones struggling to feed our kids, struggling to get good education. And we're constantly told, you know, look over here. This is the problem. If we could only invade this country or if we could only do that, all our problems are going to be solved. And it's just a fantasy. It's a fantasy, you know. It's a fantasy. So, yeah, I think we need to look an awful lot closer to home for the real enemy, you know. And just respect and love each other more than anything, because your average guy on the street, no matter what religion, what color he is or her, you know, they're not the problem. They are not the problem. Everybody outside of the elite is just fighting for survival. No, everybody just wants the same things. They want a house, they want heat, they want food, and they want protection, and they want a bit of safety, and they want a nice environment to bring up their kids. That's all anybody wants, you know? It's just the other crazy lunatics that want more and more and more. Is that Mr. Burns thing?
Right.
When he says to Smithers, he says, Smithers, I'm the richest man in the world. I've got, you know, a billion squillion pounds. And he goes, but I'd swap it all for just a little bit more. And it's that mentality, you know, that thing. At what point do you have enough, you know? And it seems that a very small section of our society, their greed is absolutely insatiable, you know, and so everybody else has to suffer. Anyway.
Yeah, right.
Too much.
No, it's like I said, we're on the same track here. I appreciate that. I really do. I will switch things to the bit of lighter, harder stuff here, you know, to kind of close us out because,
yes.
You know, just to bring up the Beta Band for a minute, the self-titled record now turns 20 this June. And I know you did the reissues and everything last year, which can lead to some obvious reflection for some artists. And did that happen for you at all? Does that have any influence on this album in that way?
No, not at all. No, I mean, I put the Beta Band to bed in my head a long time ago. So no, I mean, not really. No, I mean, it's something I'm immensely proud of. You know, we were just like this huge sort of rainbow psychedelic rainbow streak across the sky that crashed into a mountain. And there's something incredibly beautiful about that. You know, nobody changed us. We never gave in to the corporate pressures that were surrounding us. And we spent every single penny that we ever got hold of on the art, on creating that art. And so, yeah, I'm certainly really proud of it. But, I'm not into kind of, you know, going backwards. I'm sure at some point there'll be a time to look backwards and what have you, but it's certainly not now.
I will say one thing about that record is, and I think you've said something similar before, is that, you know, everything changed really quickly after that record came out. Like, that was the last one in the door for that era or something like that. And it was almost like that was the final record before even the industry just kind of, you know, flipped itself over and turned itself inside out. And for whatever, I guess what I'm getting to is how we hear a record in the moment is usually also determined by the environment going on around that. So being able to kind of listen to it now with all of that context pushed aside like that and have it just sounds like a very different record now than when I heard it, you know, in 1999. And I mean, I still enjoy it. We still play Round the Bend here at WFPK all the time.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I guess the environment for music is so different now. There's no money in the music industry anymore at all. So the people that are still in it and still surviving are generally pretty good people, because all the people that were making huge amounts of money, they've all moved on because there's no money left in the music industry. So you're left with a lot of people that really, really care about the music that's being put out. I mean, there's still a lot of corporate scumbags as well putting out absolute nonsense. But because the money's not there, I mean, like a band like the Beta Band couldn't exist now. It right. wouldn't exist. And I think that's what I meant by that comment that you brought up a minute ago. I think that there's just no way that record could be made. It would be impossible. Nobody would put any money behind it. And that's really sad. You know, that is really, really sad, because there should be room for every kind of art and music within an industry, you know, like the music industry. There should be everything, you know. And it just seems to be the spectrum of music, I feel, is just getting narrower and narrower and narrower. I mean, I'm not sure what it's like in America, but here it's kind of just everything just feels horribly corporate or totally DIY. So people in bands who have day jobs and stuff like that. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Not everybody, you know, should be a rock star and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you know, there used to be a thing in the UK called the Dole, which was basically like, it was like income support. So if you didn't have a job, you could, the government would give you like a basic living wage. You know, they'd put money towards your rent, and they'd give you sort of enough money to buy food and stuff like that. And that was enough to live on while you were starting a band or for anyone that was involved in any way in the arts. It was a godsend, because you could survive and do your art, you know, while you were getting good at whatever it is that you were going to do, whether you're a painter or a sculptor or a musician or a filmmaker or whatever it was. You had the time and the breathing space to do that. And that allowed people from poorer backgrounds to become artists. But now that's all gone. So the art really in this country, it feels like it's kind of, especially music, feels like it's kind of become the plaything for the kind of sons and daughters of the establishment. And I just think that's a very dangerous place for any art to be, because art should be a myriad of things. But one of the things that I think it should be is it should hold a microscope or a looking glass up to society and have a good look and a good look at that society and reflect it back at itself. And there's no way that the sons and daughters of the establishment are ever going to hold a magnifying glass up to them, because they'd be looking at themselves in the mirror. So I think that's a very sad state of affairs. But, you know, art finds a way. There's always going to be music. It's always going to happen somehow, you know. So I don't think it's not all doom and gloom, but certainly I think it's difficult. It's difficult. It's difficult.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I didn't actually know about that compensation, but you know, I'm really happy it happened because, you know, some of my favorite music comes from your all side of the world. And I'm sure you're right that it wouldn't have happened without that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I appreciate that. And I'll actually tie that in here to the record, too. Yeah. I so appreciate what you've done throughout your career. And I really do think this new record, About the Light, is, you know, probably one of the best things you've ever done. You're still knocking it out, man.
Thanks. Well, I really appreciate that. Well, if there's any promoters out there listening to this, then feel free to get in touch because I would love to come back out and play in America, you know, maybe this year or next year at some point. So any gig offer is greatly received, man.
Yeah, we would love to have you, Steve. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk. Yeah, and again, congratulations on About the Light.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for talking, Kyle. Speak to you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
A big old thanks to Steve Mason. The record is called About the Lights. Really appreciate all that conversation right there. Hey, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from. Again, wherever you get your podcast from, there is a subscribe button there. You can check us out on Spotify, on YouTube, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. We can also find some bonus episodes of this series over there. Get all your music and film news at consequenceofsound.net. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook.com/Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-FOR Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.